the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Roll call, sound off. We are here for you. That's right. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Coming up this hour on Bucket Strategy Investing, we've got our in-house brain trust advisor, the aforementioned Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner, back with me once again to answer your money questions. Rick here from Lucia Capital Group. We'll get into this hour's strategy session in just a couple of moments here. Going to have a couple of leftover topics from the sale of a home last hour, but also 401k loans and all that kind of stuff. This session, it also includes your emails from this hour and from last hour, and of course your phone calls, which we're going to take first. We got some folks on hold. Keep it right here. We got more of the information you need to know about your money and your money strategies. So I said those emails, send them to us here at wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link there at the top, upper right part of the page at wealthed.com. Your money questions are invited. They're encouraged. They're welcomed. And you call us because we'll take the phone calls first, 877-PLANNER. Our number here in the studio, PLANNER. You can get in touch with the Brain Trust off the air if you prefer to do it that way. You need a personalized buckets plan? Sure you do. The Brain Trust, they'll put one together for you at Lucia Capital Group. You call Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors on their off-air number, 800-644-1150. You can schedule an appointment with the Brain Trust advisor. Talk to the advisors about your retirement. This is why we're here for you. We're here to help you out. 800-644-1150. That's off the air, on the air, our number, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Got a couple folks on hold, so we're going to take calls immediately here. Let's see, we're going to go to Tien, I think it is, up first. Hello, Tien.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have some questions about capital gain on the property that I live in, but it's not in my name. It's been a quick claim to me that I've been, I haven't recorded yet. So I don't know how I do that.
Well, so you don't actually own it yet. The quit claim has not been recorded, so you're not the owner until it gets recorded, really.
But can I sell it and then I record it now and then sell it without paying capital gain, or I have to be wait until I record it officially? It's been notarized and everything.
Right, but you haven't actually transferred title. So the title's not in your name. And to get the exclusion on the home, the title has to be in your name for 24 months, and you have to live in it for 24 months, not concurrently.
Yeah, I live in it, but I've not recorded. And I've been
technically you live in it, but you don't own it.
Even though it's not recorded, I mean...
Who's paying the property tax? Who's taking the property tax? Are you taking the property tax deduction?
Well, originally it was me and my cousin. I co-signed it to... It co-signed for me, and I've been paying mortgage ever since.
So the mortgage is in your name?
No, not my name. No.
The mortgage is not in your name.
You're paying the mortgage.
And so whose name is on the property title as far as who is paying the property taxes? Not you.
But the title is on my cousin's name.
Right. So basically, you're making a gift, or you're actually renting it from your cousin because he's responsible for the property tax. He's responsible for the mortgage. His name is on the mortgage. His name is on the property tax bill. He's the owner of the property. Record it, live in it for, you know, own it for another 24 months, and then you can exclude up to $250,000.
So I thought it was, even though it's not recorded, it's been notarized, I cannot,
Who are they going to come after for if the mortgage payment is not made? Who are they going to come after if the property taxes are not paid? You?
Okay.
Or him. Right now, you have a piece of paper that the county knows nothing about. The state knows nothing about.
Okay.
Yeah. So in other words, he's the one who's on the hook for both property taxes and mortgage, even though you're the one that's been paying it. In essence, you're either gifting it, or as Professor Plum said, you're probably more accurately renting it.
Now, what did he pay for the property originally?
Pardon me?
Now, did you and he buy the property at the same time? I mean, he just put it all in his name, though?
No. At the same time, me and him both got to buy the property, and then I quick claimed to him, and then I quick claimed back to me.
So you guys bought it. You changed your ownership from you to him, so he owned 100% of it, and then now he's giving it over to you so that ultimately you'll own 100% of it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, yeah, but it's not recorded. That's
I know it's not recorded. How much did you guys pay for it originally? How much is it worth now?
About 300.
So a nice gain. It would be nice to. And you, when do you want to sell it? Like, you want to sell it like next week?
Probably a couple more months. Yeah, after I build another home, I move over.
And what date is on the deed?
The deed on me, my.
What date?
About 2 years ago. Yeah, about three years ago. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can try it, get it recorded, and see if they'll record it as of that previous date. But what happens though is when you record the loan, or record the deed, the people that own the loan, your cousin is on the loan, right?
Yes, yes.
They're going to want to get paid, so you're going to have to sell it pretty quick at that point, or okay. Refinance it.
I see.
Change of ownership.
So the deed, quitclaim deed, is not recorded, but it's been 2 years ago.
So try to get it recorded and see if they'll record. This is where I don't know the fine print of this.
They'd have to be willing to go back and do it from a couple of years ago, right?
Because technically you don't own it yet. Because, yeah. Yes, you have a deed, but that deed means nothing. I mean, if it got burned up right now, there's no proof that the transfer ever occurred. If that deed ripped up, got wet, there's absolutely no proof. If, heaven forbid you're driving down the road and you lose that deed and it gets ripped up, you can't just say, well, I own this property, so I'm selling it. Nobody will ever buy it from you. They'd have to have your cousin sign for everything all over again. I think you have to get it recorded.
Okay. So they record it, do they go by the same the original day, or they just record this day that we caught it? But technically that it's been 2 years, I haven't recorded yet.
Probably have to find out by doing it.
You're going to have to find out. I don't know the answer. My guess is they record it the day they get it. But I don't know.
I see.
I don't know that answer.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, Tien. Thank you for the
call. One last question, Tien.
Are you still with us?
Yeah.
Why didn't you record it 2 years ago?
I just didn't have a chance to do it yet. That's all.
Okay. 2 years. Okay.
Well, now he has his reasons.
Let's see if it hurts.
Yeah. If you find out, let us know. I'd kind of like to know myself, Tien. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Because I say, the quick claim has been 2 years ago. I haven't recorded. That's your.
Yeah.
I've been paying property, mortgage, and everything on my name. I have track record. I've been paying all since.
But you haven't been able to take the deductions or anything.
Legally, you're not supposed to take the deduction because it's not your responsibility.
Yeah.
Well, you're a nice guy anyway.
Okay. Well, I'll let you know.
Please do. All right. Thank you, Tien. I appreciate the call. You bet. Okay. So for those who just tuned in, he's doing what's called a quit claim or attempting to do a quit claim deed.
Right. A quit claim deed is I'm just saying I'm giving up my rights in the ownership and I'm giving it over to John Dean, whoever I quit claim the deed over to. Actually, there's no guarantee that I even own the property that I'm quit claiming. That would be more of a warranty deed, but it's just me saying I'm transferring the property over to somebody else.
And it's his cousin, I guess?
It's his cousin.
He had bought it with, or...
They bought it together.
Yeah.
He transferred it to his cousin's name 100% some time ago, and then the cousin is transferring it back to his name 2 years ago. My guess is they didn't want to have to redo the loan. Because the loan is only in the cousin's name.
Okay.
I'm guessing.
All right.
But now they want to sell it, and he wants to exclude the issue. But the problem is it's been more than two. Heck, the cousin should sell it in his name and exclude the gain and then just give him
the cash, and then he can buy the...
Yeah, have the cousin sell it. Rip up this one. It depends on whether the cousins live there or not, though. He may not have lived there.
Oh, that's true. Well, we don't know that. All right. Well, boy, this creates a lot of issues. But once again, we're trying to fit in the use test. There's a use test and an ownership test.
The use test is I have to be using it as my primary residence. I'm registered to vote there. I file my taxes there. My cars are registered there.
Which our caller Tien was doing in this particular home.
And I have to own it. That's the key. Does a signed quit claim that has never been recorded constitute ownership? I'm siding on the side that says no, but I don't know the technical legal answer on that.
Worst that happens is what? He quit claims it over to Tien, our caller, and then Tien lives in it for another, or no,
just
he owns
it
for a couple of years. He doesn't have to live in it. He just owns it for a couple more years
and then sells it.
Goes ahead and sells it. to me, that might be the easiest solution, although it doesn't mean that it does mean that they can't sell it like next week or 2-3 months like he said he wanted to do.
So talk to the escrow people, and the people that actually sell houses, they'll be able to tell you how it works.
Yeah, and by the way, if they're willing to do it, you know, hey, so much the better. I just don't know that they are willing to do it. So, okay, thank you for the call. 877-PLANNER. We got a couple more things to say about primary residences and selling homes and all that stuff. Kind of our topic last hour. We got to take a break here, but we're going to come back and talk more about that. We got some emails to get to as well. A couple of questions we had from the last couple of days regarding 401k loans. If I have time, I'm going to get into that with Professor Plum. Again, a couple of emails that we're going to cover when we come back. But your phone calls always come first. And that's what I would encourage, because right now we've got four lines open. Give us a call with your money questions. A Brain Trust standing by. Our phone number, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum here from Lucia Capital Group. Coming right back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, answering all manner of phone calls, emails, money questions, strategy questions. We're here to help you out. This is what we do. We have the Brain Trust. We've been answering questions for nigh on 25 years now, I would say. In fact, I think I figured that out. This year at some point we hit, I think I said this before, it'll be 25 years.
For the show.
1991, right. You came along a couple of years after that. I don't know what we did prior to that. We had little guest Brain Trust members on. Actually, I do remember that.
We had an accountant.
We had an accountant. We had an estate planning a person.
Tax
we had
attorney.
An attorney. We had a tax attorney. Yeah, wow. Anyway, we've been doing this for a long time, so we're here to answer your money questions as we will continue to do so right here on TV and radio across the country. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Professor Plum was going to look up a couple of things on our last caller, so maybe we'll have some potential news. I don't know. Well, we'll get to it.
Well, it does vary by state to state. We were talking about when does a quit claim deed become effective. And from what I'm reading, it's effective as soon as it's delivered. So it would, technically, the property ownership transferred when it was executed. The quit claim deed was notarized and actually delivered to the hands of the new individual. What I'm reading is, and now this is not specific to the state he was living in, and states do vary the laws do vary from state to state, that doesn't have to be recorded to be effective.
Okay, so he could be all right, I guess.
But it does muddy the waters.
Well, it sure does. It probably helps to have everything in black and white and recorded, et cetera. Okay, 877-PLANNER. We'll get to more on the home sales. I want to take a couple more calls. David, we'll put you up next in Las Vegas. Hi, David. Hello, David. I think there's a tax on a sale of a house. Put him on hold for just a second. We'll see if David is still there. I know he had a question on capital gains taxes. On the sale of a home. And actually, this is one of the topics that we were talking about before last hour. And I wanted to sort of come back on this as well, since I think this was one of David's questions. And if he's still there, fine. If he wants to give us a call back, we can talk to him, also answer the questions. There is, on the sale of a primary residence, just to reiterate what we were saying, Professor Plum, there is currently no tax on a sale if you meet certain conditions.
Right. Own it for 24 months before sale. And live in it for at least 24 months of the 60 months preceding the sale. So if you can qualify for both of those, and it was your primary residence for at least 24 of those months, then you can probably exclude up to $250,000 of the gain if you're a single individual. Married couple can qualify for up to $500,000 of exclusion. Married couple, they don't both have to be on the ownership title, but they do have to both use it. And if they're not on the ownership title, they do have to file a joint return for the year of the sale to be able to split that, to get the double exemption on
that. $500,000 instead of $250,000.
Now, if you're selling a property where you don't meet the 24 months, there are some exceptions. If you are moving because of a job relocation being more than 50 miles away, if you're moving because the doctor has ordered you to move because of your health, and you don't meet the 24-month time horizon of ownership or use, you can use a proration of the gain. So it's if you've lived there for 80% of the months required, you could use 80% of the exemption. If you've lived there for 12 months, you could get half of the exemption. So if even you can use the entire gain as long as it's less than the exempted amount. So this is a proration of the exemption, not a proration of the gain. Hopefully you can get a lot of gain in those 12 months or however many months before 24 that you can do it. So there are some potential exemptions, but there's not many.
Yeah, it used to be, just to, again, to go over this, it used to be many years ago, in fact, prior to May 7th of 1997, the owner of a home had to move up, as they said, if they were under the age of 55.
The old 1034 tax deferred exchange.
That's what it was. We've heard of 1031, 1035. We never hear of 1034 again because...
Well, it's been repealed.
It doesn't exist anymore. What you had to do was, you had 2 years once you sold a home. You had gain in your home. This is where it came into play. You had gain in your home. You had 2 years from the sale of that home to put that money into another home.
To buy an equal or greater home. Now, actually, you didn't have to put the money in. You just had to buy a property, a new primary residence of equal or greater value. It didn't require you have the same amount of debt, didn't require you use the same money that came out of the first property to put into the separate property. None of that. It was just a matter of, I sold a place for $250. I had to buy another place for at least $250 within the two-year mm-hmm. time horizon.
And then once you hit age 55, you had a one time where you
Section
could
121.
You could buy down, as they said, but there was a limit on that too, I believe.
$125,000 limit.
$125,000.
And that was once in your lifetime.
That's right. After that, you had to stay there or pay capital gains taxes. I'm told David is back. David, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Hi. How can we help you today?
Oh yeah, because I got disconnected. My question again was, if you lived in the house as your primary resident for the last, say, 15 years, and you want to sell it, do I have to pay any taxes on it?
How much gain do you have? How much are you selling it for?
Well, I don't know yet. I haven't
about
talked to a realtor, so.
I mean, you have an idea of what you would sell it for, though, right?
Well, I bought it for $175.
Okay.
Bought it for $175.
And, you're married or single?
Yeah. Excuse me?
Are you married or single?
Oh, single.
Okay.
Okay, and the last time I had appraised was like, maybe 10 years ago. I haven't had appraised since then. But the housing market has gone back up, so I figured it'll be at least $250 by now.
Okay, as long as the gain is, you've lived in it as your primary residence for the last 15 years. You're still living there now, right?
Yes.
As long as you sell it for less than $425,000, you will not owe capital gains taxes on the sale.
Oh, okay.
You have a $250,000 get out of jail free card on this particular type of gain. When you've lived in a house for 24 months or longer, and you've owned a house for 24 months or longer, when you've lived in it as your primary residence, you can exclude up to $250,000 of gain. That's gain on top of what your basis is. Your basis is what you paid for it, plus any improvements that you've made to it over the past 15 years, the life of the ownership. And so if you're selling it for less than $250,000 or for $250,000, then there can't be $250,000 of gain. And so you're going to be fine. Look at what you paid for it, plus improvements. Add $250,000 to that, and that's the amount of sale proceeds you can sell it for without having to worry about a tax.
Oh, okay, cool. All right.
Yeah, so
thank
you could
you very much.
Whatever you bet. Yeah. So you could walk away with, if you happen to get $250,000 for it, you walk away with $75,000, roughly.
Of gain,
and
now who knows what his loan is? Maybe he's refinanced, and he still owes $250.
Do you owe anything? It doesn't matter. But do you owe anything on
nothing.
The loan?
Yes.
Okay. Well, but even so,
there's no requirement that you buy another property. There's no requirement that you do anything specific with this money. You can do what if you sell it for less than $425,000. You can do whatever you want after that with the money. It's yours. It's tax free. It's a good thing.
Okay, so there's no, income tax or capital gains?
No.
Or...
Nope, doesn't show up anywhere.
Nope. Now, if the escrow company...
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
If the escrow company somehow sends you a 1099, you still show it on your return and say zero taxable event because it was excluded Section 121. 121.
Yeah, actually, because the escrow company doesn't...
They hopefully will not send a 1099.
They're supposed to know, but they...
They're supposed to not send the 1099.
But you never know. But here it again, another case. If a 1099 is issued, account for it on your taxes.
Don't ignore it.
Right. Just account for it and tell them, You're good to go. Okay. More on this and anything else. Lines open, 877-PLANNER. Call the Brain Trust now with your money questions. Coming back with more right after this.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane.
You Top Gun. Right? That was yesterday. We played some Top Gun songs yesterday. Yeah. And it just occurred to me this was one of them. I mean, not written obviously for the movie or anything like that.
But they played it in the movie.
Yes.
The scene with Anthony Edwards and Meg Ryan and them all singing there.
And the little
together.
Kid.
The
right.
Little kid.
So, yes. Again, that was
the
another,
goose,
another dumb
Edwards.
Scene.
It was iconic. It was just
okay.
It
all
showed
right.
the
it
human
never,
side.
Yeah, it does. Okay,
whatever.
Fine. Yes, it was Hollywood. What do you want? Get me back in the plane, will you? See some fighter shots. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Got some lines open right now. If you've got questions on anything we've talked about today or anything we haven't talked about today, give us a call. We will talk to you about them. You can also email us. We'll get to another email or two in just a moment. Wanted to say one more thing on this, which we may have mentioned last time we were talking about this last hour, but it bears repeating again, on the ownership rules. Now, for selling a home. You just said, you have to have owned it for 24 months out of the last 60, and you must have lived in it for 24 months out of the last 60 in order to qualify for $250,000 if you're single or $500,000 of capital gains exclusion. You could walk away with that amount of profit. Now, doesn't need to be concurrent. You could have lived in it and then owned it, or owned it and then lived in it.
That would be weird, though. I don't see how that one's going to work.
Well, I don't know why you would buy it and then move out, other than, I guess,
Buy it, sell it, and then move into it after the fact. I've never seen that one done, and I'd have to read the regs.
Well, we had that call last hour. Didn't they buy it, and then they wound up renting it from the people who had sold it, or who had bought it from them?
Right, but they were selling it as their primary residence after living in it for...
Yeah.
Where they own it... sell it, and then move into it as a rental. I'm not sure if they could then go back to the previous tax return 3 years earlier and say, oh, take that gain off my tax return.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably it doesn't happen. But anyway, it's there for you. Now, okay, so $250,000 if you're single or married or filing as a single taxpayer.
Single
$500,000 if you're married. Now, a married couple... The home does not have to be in both married people's
Title
names.
Has to just be in one individual, as long as they file a joint return in the year of sale.
Right. So, but...
They both have to meet the use test.
Yes, and the use test means that they both have to live there, occupy that...
Right. This is more common in separate property states than it is in states like California and others that are community property states, where there are separate assets, where there's there is either tenancy by entirety or joint tenancy. Typically with rights of survivorship, but there's multiple owners, or it may be separate property, but everybody lives in that one house. And as long as they file a joint return at that time of the year of sale, they can get the $500,000 exemption. But if it's a separate property issue and they file separate returns and the person who was not on title is filing a separate return, then it becomes problematic. They can't take the exemption because they weren't on title and they're not... filing a joint return.
Right. So once again, this all goes back to the use and the ownership rules, which, and really, if you have if you don't have more than $250,000 a gain and only one person
makes it, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter from that standpoint.
But there are places where $250,000 a gain is way too small. I mean, we've seen people in the Bay mm-hmm. Area selling properties where even with the exemption, with an exclusion from being a rental at one point, they still can use the entire $500,000 a gain. Exemption because their gain was like $1.1 million. Some of these places have got some serious amounts of gain in them.
Yes. Now, if you do happen to go over that gain, it is a capital gains.
And it's a long-term capital gain.
It's long-term capital gain because you've obviously had to have lived there.
I was talking about somebody I met the other day down in La Jolla, California, that they bought their property back in the 60s and they paid, a couple hundred thousand dollars, a lot of money back then. But now it's worth like $6 million. Well over the $500,000 of gain, even though they've added to it over the years, improved it, and they didn't improve it by $6 million worth. And so they have a very large capital gain if they were to sell it. Yes, they can exclude $500,000 because the married couple has lived in it for the last 40 plus years, 50 years. But the reality is they're not selling it. And they're just going to unfortunately wait until one of the other spouses passes away get a new basis, and then the surviving spouse can sell it.
Yeah, okay, well, here's another point, too, that you bring up. I'm glad you brought that up. You may have owned a home for a long, long time, and you and your spouse have been living there for, you know, 40 years or whatever it is, and you have a gain that's well in excess of that $500,000. You're talking about when somebody passes away, there's a step up in basis. But how does this work with married couples?
Well, but that, we're talking about a community property state where the entire property received a step up. If we have a joint tenancy situation in a non-community property state, only the half of the property that was owned by the person who passed away receives a step up. But it obviously transfers over to the surviving spouse with joint tenancy with rights of survivorship. But maybe there's still a lot of gain left in the surviving spouse's half of the property. And so more than the $250,000, and the spouse wants to sell it. There is a provision that the surviving spouse can sell it and use the deceased's exemption and raising their surviving spouse exemption up to $500,000 if the sale happens within 2 years of the date of death. And so it can still receive the $500,000 exemption, even though one of the parties has passed away, even though there was a step up in basis on a portion of it, and still offset quite a bit of gain.
And that's in separate property states you're talking
about. That's what we're seeing, because in community property states, most of the time it's owned as community property, everything gets stepped up.
So let's just take a very quick example. By the way, 877-PLANNER if you have questions on this. You have I bought a house for $100,000 in 1960 or something, way back.
In Manhattan.
Okay, right. Okay, now it's worth $2,100,000 now.
Yeah. Okay. But it was owned between a husband and wife. Each owned a joint tenancy, rights of survivorship. So husband owned $1 million worth of it, or $1,050,000 worth of it.
Well,
you know, you've messed me up.
All right. Can you make it?
Whatever. Husband owned half of it.
Yes.
The wife owned half of it. He died. She inherits his half. So she's got now a $2 million plus. The $100,000 would be taken up in selling
expense. Well, it was $100,000 to $2,100,000.
Yeah. And so his half steps up to the full million of his basis on death. His value on death was $1 million, half of the $2 million. She now has a basis of $1,050,000. And obviously if she sells at that point, there's gonna be a very large tax. There's a gain of $1 million. And she has an exemption of $250,000.
Because she's now single.
But if she sells it within 2 years, she can actually use the deceased's $250,000 exemption as well. And exclude $500,000 of that $1 million plus of gain, rather than just $250,000 of the gain.
Now, I'm getting this backwards. In community property states,
the whole thing would have stepped up.
Would have stepped up, and then there could be a sale, and absolutely no capital gains tax would be.
It could have grown another $250,000 after that, and still
well, you never
exempted
know.
The tax.
I'm assuming that it's not.
Community property is a little bit easier to deal with. Separate property is tough. I mean,
it really is.
Those 39 states have issues.
And one more thing, because this came up with our previous caller, I think I brought it up. The basis on a property, on the sale of a home, has nothing to do whatsoever with the amount that is owed on the loan. Let's make that clear right here.
I mean, unfortunately, we saw people back in the real estate downturn, 2009, 10, 11. They may have owned their homes, you know, for 40 years, 30 years. They paid $100,000 for a house, and it was now worth $400,000. Maybe even more. Maybe it was worth $800,000. But through the years, they've borrowed against it. They've borrowed against it, and they owe $700,000. Their gain is not $100,000. Their gain is the difference between their basis, what they paid for it, and what their improvements were, and the sale proceeds. So they still have a tax, even though they only had a very small, if any, proceeds coming from the sale. It happened more on rental properties than it did on primary residence, thanks to the $500,000 of gain exclusion, but it still happened. The loan, it doesn't matter. When you buy a house, I buy a house for $250,000. I put $50,000 down and I borrow $200,000. The reality is, I gave the person who sold it to me walked away with $250,000 of cash. They receive cash. Where the money came from is not the issue. The money is cash when the sale is completed. Mm-hmm. I borrowed it. I'm responsible for paying it back, but that has nothing to do with my basis in what I paid for the property.
Right.
What I paid for the property was $250,000 in this example. The fact that I only had 50 of it of my own money and I used the bank's money, I got to pay that money back. And so paying the money back doesn't increase my basis or decrease my basis.
No. If it did, I would suggest everybody would
borrow the limit of heck.
Borrow all the way up to the limit that you can and then walk away with, you know, whatever gain is left over.
The gain has nothing to do with the loan. And when we borrow the money out of it, so I paid $100,000 for the place back 20, 30 years ago. And I, you know, it's now worth $1 million and I borrow I paid it off, $900,000 and I take it out and I go buy another building. I go blow it on a vacation. Heck of a vacation. I go do whatever it is. And then I sell it. I only get $100,000 of proceeds on the sale. But my gain, and they're saying, but I don't have the money. Yes, you do. You took $900,000 out of it already. You've already received your gain. And that's the way they're looking at it.
That is the way it is. There's something called basis, which is what your tax basis is based on.
Based on.
Your basis is tax basis is what your tax is based on.
They're going to make it difficult, don't they?
They really do. Okay. Emails, more of your phone calls. We got a little bit of room on the phones. In fact, we got room now. We got a little bit of time. 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, the Brain Trust, standing by to answer your questions when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. We've got some room on the phones, and we don't have a lot of time, so we're going to go right to, back to the phone calls. If you're on hold, we'll take care of everybody. So if we don't get to you before the top of the hour, stick around, because Professor Plum is more than willing to work overtime.
Thank you, John.
You didn't know that, did you?
I guess I was willing to.
You are, absolutely. I'm telling you. Okay, let's get back to the phone lines. We've got to get some trivia and some more emails in just a second. Gracie is up next in Las Vegas. Hi, Gracie.
Hi. Well, I did explain to the gentleman what happened, but let me explain this.
Yeah, please.
Okay, I went to work. My husband put this pool in my backyard. I did not want a pool. I had 5 children, right? The pool starts at 4 feet, and it goes to 14 feet,
wow.
Right? And I actually buried it.
Wow.
So now I'm getting older, and I'm thinking, you know, about what I want to do with this house. I have this big, gigantic it's got good dirt in it, and I do have 3 trees growing in it, right? But I was wondering, how much would that affect my sale of the house?
Oh, I mean, from a pricing standpoint, you'd have to talk to a realtor in your area. I mean, so she didn't take the pool out. She just brought in bulldozers and trucks and buried it and then planted trees on top of it. So the pool is still there, right?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, you're going to have to talk to a realtor
about
that.
Well, wait a minute, though. So the pool was an improvement.
Well, yeah, she just wants to know how is it going to affect her sales price.
It was an improvement, but when you have 5 children and you're working, it's not an improvement.
No, I understand that.
There's a lot of people that have pools that would agree with you on that.
Yes, no, we're following you on that completely, Gracie.
She's not asking about basis or anything like that. She's asking about sales price. How is the fact that there is a buried pool on her property going to affect the sales price? And I have no idea.
Well,
some people might look at it as, hey, there's a pool there. We just need to empty it out and we can redo it. Or some people are like, oh, that's we really need to do it the right way and pull it out, pull everything out and get rid of the concrete.
So what, can you still see it? But it's just filled with dirt? Is that the deal, Gracie?
Yes, you can see it. It's really pretty. I mean, it looks nice even with the dirt in it. I have a nice big tree, and I get big.
It looks like a nice big planter now.
Yeah.
You'd have to.
I have no complaints.
You have to talk to a realtor in your area.
I don't know how that might affect it. Honestly,
but on
Gracie,
the other side, even if it does affect it, it's not going to affect it by enough money to warrant taking it out.
No. Did you pay a lot to have this thing filled up?
No.
Well, you know what happened? I went to work and came home, and there was a pool full of water. See, I had been telling my husband, we will not do this, right? And I had it for a couple of years. Then my granddaughter went out the doggy door, right? And I called up a friend of mine and told him I want this pool filled tomorrow, right? And he said, no problem. I didn't tell my husband, just like he didn't tell me about putting it in. When he came home, he found this 3 trees growing in the backyard. Right? I told him, no way, and we're going to have to live with this.
So the neighbor just filled it in.
One down the park. It's about a 5-minute walk from my house, so I don't need this thing to, you know.
Well, yeah. I tell you what, Gracie,
talk to a realtor.
You know, yeah, talk to a realtor, and I'll tell you what. I mean, as long as you tell them what it is, they can see what it is. It's really up to the buyer how much, you know, they're willing to do. I mean, some people don't want pools. You know, they see a beautiful
home.
Well,
it's an expensive
and it's
to maintain.
So Gracie, it's not a question of how much you're going to lose. It's a question of, is the right buyer going to come in and say, man, I mean, I am sure glad that that's not a pool. So you may be able to find somebody. That's probably the best we can do. If you have any other questions, hold on, Gracie. I appreciate that. Very entertaining call. And I like her. I like she's got, you know, gumption and all that. I think that's, well, she came home. The husband had put a pool in, and she said, where did this come
from? That was quick.
That was kind of quick.
Especially one that's 14 feet deep.
I wondered, did she wonder when there was a big hole in the backyard what they were going to do with it?
That's a very deep pool. I mean, you'd be doing big-time high dives on that one.
Well, it went from 4 feet to 14 feet.
Yeah, and 4 feet's deep for a shallow end.
Yeah, it is. Usually it's about
three and a half. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, they don't make them – they don't even like making them 8 feet deep anymore. I mean, 8 feet was kind of this eight and a half, nine maybe when it was a standard when I was a kid.
Yeah, seven was what I
saw. But that's
when
we had diving boards, too. You're not allowed to have a diving board.
You can't have diving boards anymore?
I don't think you can put a dive, at least not in our neighborhoods. I mean, in California, I think diving boards are outlawed. You can't put them on. No. I have not seen a new pool with a diving board. Now, they fake it by creating rocks and other things to jump off of, but there's definitely no springboarding action going on. I remember we had some pools where that springboard could put you way up in the air.
Well, depending on how big you were at the same time.
Well, that's why you got two or three guys to do it at once.
Well, you could do that. We had, our neighbors had a slide. You know, you climb up the slide.
Slides are still popular.
But we didn't slide down it. We stood on the top of the slide because it was quite high and just jumped into the deep end of the pool that way.
Had one of those curved ones, so
yes,
it was close enough.
Yes, yeah. That's how
our neighbors are putting in a pool, and it's a vanishing edge. And the slide, they're building it. I was like, where's the slide go? Because the slide goes down the hill.
Yes.
It goes into another pool below it that's being formed by the vanishing edge.
Wow.
It's sweet.
Tell you what, I mean, they've come a long way since then.
Pools are incredible.
All right.
And they're expensive. And they're difficult to maintain.
Well, and that's the thing with Gracie. Gracie was asking, how much do you think this would affect the value of the home? I honestly think, because there are some people that love a home, and they walk in and they say, oh, there's a pool in the backyard. I don't want the maintenance. I'm afraid of, you know, liability.
Right now in the Southwest with the drought that the Southwest is having, pools are in some cases a drawback.
Well, there are, and some people just don't want.
I
was a kid, I had to clean it every Saturday morning, and
I still want a pool.
You still want a pool? Mm-hmm. You don't have one?
I do not.
Okay, well, you know what? I mean, Gracie had one. Well, never mind.
But I have the key to the fence between my house and my neighbor's house, and so.
Okay, so that works too.
Next best thing of having your own is having a neighbor that has one that they let you use all the time.
Because you don't have to vacuum it out, is what you're saying, right?
Works for me.
Hey, coming up on this program tomorrow, among many of the topics, we're going to be talking about Social Security taxation. We get a lot of questions on Social Security, and taxation is one of them. Some people aren't aware that Social Security can be taxed, and it has nothing to do with how old you are, by the way. That's the other sort of myth that's floating around, that once you hit full retirement age, or once you hit age 70 or 70 and a half, I've heard that Social Security is no longer taxable. Professor Plum, that is not the case.
It has nothing to do with age.
Nothing to do with age. It has everything to do with how much other income you have besides Social Security. So we're going to talk about that, tell you how to perhaps plan around that. It's important to keep planning, and that's why we talk about that on this program. Didn't get to the trivia. We'll try to get to the trivia. We'll push it to another day. It was a good one today. Good one today. But we'll push it off till tomorrow. In the meantime, if you want to talk to the Brain Trust off the air, and I include Professor Rick Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, you can reach them at, how about this, their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.